Well, good afternoon, everyone, and we're continuing with Letters on Occult Meditation video commentary, program 16. And we're on page 61, and we're talking about the pronunciation and use in individual meditation of the sacred word. So far we've had the postulates, the constructive and creative use of the word, and now the pronunciation of the word. Okay, let's see what he says. I shall now be very practical. I speak for the man on the probationary path, who has therefore an intellectual grasp of what has to be accomplished. This probationary path can be considered going up to the a kind of true discipleship or true aspiration at the first degree, or even further until one is an accepted disciple. He realizes approximately his place in evolution and the work to be done, if he would someday pass through the portal of initiation. In this way, what I say will teach the majority who study these letters. Well, and now, you know, you can understand that maybe he began to speak of those specific people who were studying the letters, and then therefore they leave a blank, because some things, I guess, you know, are just not our business. Okay. The man undertakes to meditate and seeks to conform to the necessary rules. And let me give a few preliminary hints. This sounds, you know, very foundational. The aspirant seeks daily a quiet spot where he can be free from interference and interruption. If wise, he will always seek the same spot, for he will there build up a shell around it that will serve as a protection and make the desired contact more easy. Now, at some point, he does speak about the inadvisability of building a protective shell when compared to this sevenfold radiation of divine love, which he gave to the disciple FCD as a method of protection. But at least this is like, you know, being in a sound chamber, or when you're, you know, making a recording, you don't want street noise, so you put a special kind of material in the room where the recording is being done, and it absorbs all the interference from outside. The matter of the spot, the matter of what you might term the surrounding space, becomes then attuned to a certain vibration, the man's own highest vibration reached in consecutive meditations, which makes it easier for him each time to start at his highest and so eliminate a long preliminary keying up. Well, I do know disciples who have their own little meditation place, and they seem to, you know, use it, their meditation room. It is specially consecrated. Maybe if you have a strong seventh ray, this is an easier thing to do. Anyway, we certainly understand why it should be so. It's a building process which creates an energy atmosphere into which you can enter more immediately than when you have to fight off other energies in a different kind of place. Okay, the aspirant composes himself to a position in which he can be unconscious of his physical body. No hard and fast rules can be laid down, as the physical vehicle itself has here to be considered. It may be handicapped in some way, stiff or crippled. Ease of posture should be aimed at, coupled with alertness and attention. Very straightforward. Slothfulness and laxness lead a man nowhere. So the position most suitable for the average is cross-legged upon the ground, sitting against something that affords support to the spine. In intensest meditation, or when the aspirant is very proficient and the centers rapidly awakening, perhaps even the inner fire pulsating at the base of the spine, the back should be erect without support. The head should be thrown back, as tension is to be avoided. No, the head should not be thrown back, sorry, as tension is to be avoided, but it should be held level or with the chin slightly dropped. When this is done, that tenseness, which is characteristic of so many, will be gone, and the lower vehicle will be relaxed. The eyes should be closed and the hands folded in the lap. Well, this is, what can we say, very straightforward. And clear. Very clear. So straightforward and clear that I don't have a good memory of having read it. Well, that would have been a long time ago when these books, I first encountered them, back about, I encountered them earlier, but encountered to study probably 49 years ago, and then 50 years ago coming up soon. So, all right, well, we might as well have the right kinds of positioning so as not to create obstacles in our work. Then let the aspirant note if his breathing is regular, steady, and uniform. So should this be so, let him then relax his entire person, holding the mind positive and the physical vehicle supple and responsive. Okay. Possible practicality here regarding the position of the physical body is dealt with. Then let him visualize his three bodies, and having decided whether his meditation shall be in the head or within the heart, I will later take up this point, he says, let him withdraw his consciousness there and focus himself in one or other of the centers. So it looks like, in addition to withdrawal to the head or heart, another center will be involved. And a relationship, it appears, will be set up between the major center through which the meditation is being carried forward, and it looks like yet another center. In so doing, let him deliberately realize that he is a son of God returning to the Father, that he is God himself, seeking to find the God consciousness which is his, that he is the creator seeking to create, that he is the lower aspect of deity seeking alignment with the higher. It's been many years, and I have absolutely no memory of reading this. I guess one assumes one reads the books, all of them, and sometimes one inadvertently skips over something. But, you know, we also forget what we have read and need to be refreshed. Of course, I could have made the mistake and saying, oh, well, this is too simple, I don't need to read it. That is what some of us fall into. I told you the story of the man who didn't think we should be studying the rules of the road in a fairly high-powered class, and then the class just proceeded to break every one of the rules. We did at least go through them, but they were of greater profundity than the naysayers imagined. Okay, then let him three times intone the sacred word, breathing it forth gently the first time, and thereby affecting the mental vehicle, more loudly the second time, thereby stabilizing. Well, let's see, what are the words being used? The verbs being used. Affecting, it doesn't say how, and stabilizing, that gives a clearer image, I think. And in a still louder tone, the final time, acting then upon the physical vehicle. All right. And then we have the, what will be the result? So when he says he's going to be practical, it is really down to earth here. The effect upon each body will be threefold. If correctly chanted with the center of consciousness steadily held within whichever center has been chosen, the effect will be as follows. So, let's take a look at the mental levels first with the quieter chanting. Number one, or A, the contacting of the head center, causing it to vibrate, and the stilling of the lower mind. All right? That's from the quiet sounding of the Om. And, you know, are we focusing in the head or heart? Maybe that will also make a difference. B, the linking up with the ego to a more or less degree, but always to some extent through the permanent atom. And I suppose what this may mean, the mental unit, now, the monastic permanent atom is outside the ego of Clotus, if we can talk about inside and outside here. But within the ego of Clotus, the mental unit is found as part of the atomic triangle. So, linking up with the ego to a more or less degree, but always to some extent. And I'll put that, I'll put that in this color. And then the driving out of coarse particles and the building in of finer particles, as has been discussed. So we'll take something as close to purple as we can get, but it's not exactly. So just reviewing, when in a gentle manner, the om is sounded with respect to the mental vehicle, the head center will be contacted and it will be caused to vibrate, and the lower mind will be stilled, which is one of the requirements, stilling the modifications of the lower psychic nature, I suppose, including the mind and the astral vehicle. And this given by the great teacher Patanjali. Then there'll be a linking up with the ego to some extent via the, it says permanent atom, but so often, decay, when he's dealing with the atomic triangle, he simply sometimes calls the mental unit the permanent atom. And then the driving out of coarse or coarser particles and the building in of finer. Now, let's see what we have here when it comes to emotional vehicle and emotional levels. What will be the result? The sounding will be a little louder. I think we should remember that it's quite relative, really. But relative to each other, a quieter, middling, and louder sounding as we descend. Okay, and on emotional levels, the definite stabilization of the emotional body through the permanent atom and the contacting and setting in motion of the heart center. You know, we have to be must be very conscious of these outcomes. So the definite stabilization of the emotional body through the permanent atom. So, basically, it's not only the solar plexus chakra that's being reached, the atomic triangle at the base of the lotus is being reached. So not only the chakra in question are being reached, but the atomic triangle at the base of the egoic lotus is being reached. Okay, so that's the first effect, stabilization. next, the driving out of coarse matter and the rendering of the emotional and desire body more colorless so that it will be a true reflector of the higher. So what was point C before has become point B, and it looks like what was point A before, no, point B before has become point A. So the driving out of coarse matter, you know, we have to get rid of the matter which is not resonant to the energies of the soul, driving out. And we do want to have, you know, what is called translucence and eventual transparence. And then, this is something new, it causes a sudden rush of feeling from the atomic levels of the emotional plane to the intuitional plane via the atomic channel that exists between the two. So this involves atomic, astral atomic energy and idealism, and appears to touch the highest subplane of the Buddhic plane, even though that has been declared a permanent atom and a level, the full energy of which cannot really be handled by even the master. It sweeps upward and clarifies the channel. Okay. Sudden rush. Now, you know, we have to give ourselves, I think, time to accomplish these things. So we just can't go om om om, you know. At first, at least, we have to be attentive to what is happening. Okay, and then finally, on the physical planes, and when he says planes, of course, they really are subplanes of the etheric, physical, systemic, or sometimes called solar plane. So, the physical plane, and maybe, you know, we'll give it the third ray color here. Here, the effect is very similar, but the primary effect is in the etheric body, and it stimulates the divine flow, presumably of prana and of other energies through the etheric body. So, similar perhaps to the other to some of the effects which look to be a bit more physical in relation to the physical part of the plane. Actually, the lower three subplanes of each of these planes is attuned physically, and the higher four subplanes of each of these systemic planes is attuned etherically. So a divine flow is being stimulated here, and also here there are only two of the effects. B, it passes beyond the periphery of the body and creates a shell that serves as a protection. It drives away discordant factors in the near environment. And maybe we can use, you know, as close as we have to a seventh ray color. And here, the divine flow, at least the prana, is very affected, stimulated. So all of this, these are subsidiary results of sounding the om in a quiet, a middling, and a louder manner. And the effects are produced in the three lower personality vehicles. We consider the etheric physical to be one. We consider it to be namely physical. And the astral body is a unified sevenfold body, although two of the subplanes are considered to be out of bounds, the sixth and the seventh, the low ones. And then the mental body, like the physical body, is split. And so we're largely talking about the lower part of the mental body. Okay, so that's what we have seen. Three effects for each one of the vehicles. Actually, two effects for the physical vehicle, and a progressively a stronger sound, a quiet for the mental vehicle, moderate for the astral vehicle, and stronger for the physical vehicle. Now we are beginning with something quite interesting, at least from the title. He certainly has in the last presentation given us foundational practical positioning and foundational simple practices for beginning our meditative process. And you know, when the foundation is not in place, it's a bit dangerous to build the building. So maybe some of us rush into the higher aspects of meditation, so we think, with a shaky foundation. We should avoid that, definitely, and follow through with what is given. This next one, just a couple of pages, I think, it talks about the logoic chord. We've already done quite a bit with music. Let's see if this is also a musical kind of discussion. We have seen, you know, the chord of the monad, but now we're speaking, it looks like we have a macrocosmic thought here. Although the solar logos is considered to be the macrocosm to man, and there really are a lot of similarities in the procedures, although on an entirely different scale, we have to always and also to think that the entire planetary logos is macrocosmic in its relation to man. All right, so we were studying notes, and of course the sacred word has to be sounded or can be sounded on different pitches. It too is a note of music in a way. Now let us proceed with the study of the use of the sacred word in its group application and in its employment for certain specific ends. And now he's going to review just a little here, I think. It's always good to tell us what we have studied so we do remember. We have very briefly studied the word as used by the individual who begins to meditate, the effect of its use being very largely one of purification, stabilization, and centralization. All right, those are three important words: purification, stabilization, and centralization. I mean, you know, we can apply these to each of the vehicles, but maybe working from below up, we get the most characteristic application. Purifying the etheric physical, stabilizing the astral, and centralizing, concentrating the mind. This is all that is possible until the student has reached a point where he may be allowed to sound the note in one of the subtones egoic. Well, maybe that has to do with, subsidiary ashrams characterized by specific notes. And one of them characterized, I would say, by the same note as the entire Ray Ashram. So we may sound that note, not knowing we are doing so, but the whole question of ascertainment is necessary so that we know exactly what we're doing, and that cannot be yet confirmed. You will have in the egoic note just the same sequence as in the note logoic. So the individual, the egoic note, the logoic note. Three types of levels for the sounding. Individual, egoic, and logoic. And what had you there? You had a sevenfold cord, of which the important points at our stage of development are the following. So this is interesting, a sevenfold cord, all the notes of the octave. How about getting that right? Sounding simultaneously. It sounds a lot like modern music, and you don't have the same ringing harmonies, but if all notes are sounding simultaneously, even as all the principles are present simultaneously, and all of the vehicles are present simultaneously, some of them will stand out more than others. Namely, the fundamental, the major third, the dominant fifth, and the monad. And there are other notes sounding, of course. And how do you keep them from sort of muddying the effect? I think it's in the relative volume. And there's much modern music that uses what's called, chord clusters. stabilizes cord clusters. And the intervals in those clusters are quite close, and therefore there is the sense of, as the ear hears it, the sense of dissonance. But you can get used to it, and it can have quite an interesting effect when a choir works with chord clusters. Well, any note that they sing can somehow fit. It may not be the most prominent note. And I've seen or heard a choir do that. And then every note becomes acceptable. Under some of the laws of harmony, rules of harmony, and especially at different periods in the development of harmony, certain notes were just not acceptable. I may have mentioned that the third of the personality was expelled from medieval music as being ungodly and too personal. The fifth was used, and it could move in a parallel manner, you know, one fifth after another. The fourth, the ram taram, could also be used in a parallel manner. And you could have a sequence of fourths, but not the third. It's a sweetening tone, the major third. It has a lot to do with buddhi, and it wasn't acceptable. And what's interesting is that when you hear some of this very old medieval music, it almost sounds modern in its effect, with the third no longer present. I'm thinking of the works of Guillaume Machaut, a French composer of the, was it 13th or 14th century? And there were certain older composers who did not use what we call the harmonies of the major harmonic period. And they sound stark in a way and modern, because modernity has taken away so many of the sweetening factors. I remember going to music school, you know, for a long time and not liking the music at all that we were compelled to listen to, because the harmonic factor that agrees with the energy system of the body had been removed as outgrown and no longer relevant, somehow passé. And it made for, in my view, very boring concerts, and concerts that were maybe intellectually interesting to some, but could not reach the heart, I think. Anyway, that was my opinion. So a sevenfold chord can result from all of the chord clusters. If I was to go between the C and the C, take one octave, for instance. And then play all the intervening notes. If I played just the white notes of the piano, it would sound less dissonant, but still dissonant. And if I actually played all of the chromatic notes, which ascended and descended by half steps, it would sound extremely dissonant, because we would have the constant playing of the interval of the minor second, not the major second. Well, I did discuss which were the most dissonant intervals, and basically they are the minor second, the tritone, or the devil in music, dividing the octave evenly, and then the major seventh. So what had you there? So you will have in the egoic note just the same sequence as in the note logoic. What did you have? You had a sevenfold cord, of which the important points at our stage of development are, now maybe he's going to, you know, give something else when we have higher monadic and triadal development. And this is interesting, he calls it the ultimate seventh and not the minor seventh. So what we would have is starting at C. Nya-dee-dee-dum, da-dee-dum-dee. Okay, I just sang the ultimate seventh as the leading tone. But if I were to sing the minor seventh, dum-dee-dee-ta, it always is going to resolve down to the tonic. Tum-da-dee-dum-dum. So he does include this ultimate seventh for whatever reason. And all of this can be put into a color language. It's as if the ultimate seventh is all of the preparatory period before taking the sixth initiation or the, we can call it the monadic initiation. So in this case, if we start on C, now if you have a movable do, you can start anywhere you want, because do is always the fundamental tone, but let's call it C. And then the major third will be E natural, not E flat, not E flat. And then the dominant or fifth will always be G. And the ultimate seventh will be B natural and not B flat. The dominant fifth. If that starts on the note C, it resolves to the chord F, F, bum, 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 which is the tonic or the main key. But when we use the ultimate seventh, dee, 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 bum, 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 then basically the resolution is toward the chord C. Now, all of this is the musical language of esotericism, and as I'm presenting it, in a very general and rounded out manner. There is so much complexity in the language of harmonics once you really get into it. It's extremely mathematical, and the exactitude of frequency has to be known and utilized. A hint may here be given along the line of analogy. Okay. There is a close connection between the fifth or dominant, that's the G in the key of C. Well, I'm flatting a bit. Now, when you don't have your reference pitch pipe, you may come in and sing a note slightly lower than you should be singing. So staying on pitch is really important, not only musically, but esoterically. There is a close connection between the fifth or dominant and the fifth principle, manus or mind. And especially considering the soul as it would be found on the higher mental plane, the color of which can be considered to be as much blue as it is orange. So those are kind of complementary colors there, just like purple and yellow are, and green and red. But of course, I'm just generalizing when I use those colors, because probably certain frequencies of colors make up the exact complement, the exact complementary color, and probably certain frequencies of music relative to each other make up the exact complementary notes. Anyway, the soul is monastic, and the soul is found on the higher mental plane, and the dominant fifth, in some ways connected with Leo as the dominating one, that fifth is related to the soul. Then we start, you know, moving into the triad when we consider other intervals beyond the fifth. So, and for this solar system, though not for the first and third, there is an interesting response between the fifth plane of mind and the dominant, and between the sixth plane of emotion and the major third, and that makes a lot of sense. I think the medieval musicians, and especially if they were also churchmen, wanted to keep the astral body out of it. They wanted to keep the personal response out of it. They wanted something pure, serene, and celestial, and in many ways the fifth is a more serene interval than the third. Major third we're talking about here. Yanti, that's the third. And that one has a connection with the astral body, and this one with the mind, higher mind especially. Okay. Interesting though that this did not operate in this did not occur in the intelligence system or personal system, and will not occur in the will system. So isn't it interesting that the number five, you know, that we can connect with the fifth, defines the cycles of the second ray. And we're talking about how this relationship between the fifth and the plane of soul is operative in this second or love solar system. So all of these numerical connections, you know, they do have their significance, most definitely. There is a hint may be given. There is a close connection between the fifth or dominant and the fifth principle. It's the principle of manas, and it includes the higher mind. And for this solar system, though not for the first and or third, and the third solar system will bring in the first ray, whereas the first major solar system brought in the third ray, there is an interesting response between the fifth plane of mind and the dominant. And the dominant is the soul. So, you know, I think we have to put that down. The dominant is the note especially related to the soul. And between the sixth plane of emotions and the major third. Now, the secret of the soul is held by Capricorn, and interestingly enough, Capricorn is ruling the creative hierarchies on the fifth plane, fifth from above, not from below. Except fifth from below has Saturn as the planetary ruler, which is the important ruler in Capricorn, both orthodoxly and esoterically. And then Venus, with all of its fifth ray, is the hierarchical ruler, and Venus has to do with the higher mind and the solar angels. So there's a whole cluster of relationships here. We, you know, almost have to put them down on paper or, you know, in some diagram, and we could see how this all works. Basically, we want to transition from the personal to the soul sphere, okay? So we want to transition from the personal to the soul sphere, and the from the astral to the mental and higher mental, though there is going to be a difference between the lower concrete mind, whereon the mental unit and the personality focus are found, and the higher mind. So the interval of the fourth, I think this is interesting, came to me here. The interval of the fourth, let's get a good starting note. Here comes the bride, you know. That is having to do with the lower mental plane. The interval of the augmented fourth, or the flatted fifth, the tritone, is that discordant period of life when you're trying to make the transition between the lower mind and the higher mind. And finally, when you get to the higher mind, and you've made it from the green to the blue via maybe the blue-green and all kinds of difficulties that come with that tritone. You know, we're talking about the note fa for the lower mind, and fa sharp for the transition. Or see, we're talking about fa from as the transition from the personality, which uses the lower mental vehicle as its focus, and then fa sharp, or the tritone. You know, sharp is raising a pitch, flatting is lowering it. And there are lives that are just discordant as you're going back and forth, you know. And what would that sound like, I wonder, going back and forth? That's what it would sound like as you move from the personal to the soul. From some angles in this connection, the emotional vehicle forms a third vehicle for consciousness, counting the dense physical and the vehicle of prana, or of electric vitality, as two units. Well, yeah, you can see that. And so, in fact, then from that perspective, the lower mental vehicle would be the fourth vehicle. So we'd have something, we would go through four notes. But I have indicated food for thought. Indeed, that is so. And the question is, you know, what do we use as the fundamental material tone? Because in another way, The note F, the green note, is a fundamental material tone. Shall we use red, Mars? Well, that's pretty astral, isn't it? So it's a question of how we find Earth. And, that's not an easy starting place. Some people have suggested the note C sharp and the counting of four vehicles of dense physical, astral, etheric, yeah, dense physical, etheric, astral, and mental would then be indicated in this way. Let's see, like this. But I'm afraid I'm, getting too far into it. Suffice it to say that every tone has its planetary and ray association. And we don't yet have the exact or exacting frequencies for these things. Give me a place to stand on and I will move the worlds. Kind of an Archimedean idea. We don't yet have the true point of reference in terms of frequency. We tune our orchestras in various ways, but there's no telling whether the way we tune them is really in accord with the frequencies which should be used when dealing with astrology, rheology, and the manifestation of the divine plan. Nevertheless, the general note, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, are given planetary assignments by Blavatsky, and they can be given ray assignments as well, even if we don't have the exact frequencies. So this is, The astral body is, in a way, a very material body, and the third ray and sixth ray are connected. As he says, two ones make two, two twos make four, two threes make six. So this number three is connected with the six, which is often associated with the astral body, counting from above. So if you count from below and you separate out the etheric body, you do arrive at the astral body as a three. And if you count from above, but just simply count the planes, you arrive at the astral body as a six. Okay. Well, the minute we start getting into it, it gets a little bit complex. And I would say this, that you've got to have some spiritual numerals under your belt. You want to know all the signs of the zodiac. You want to know their orthodox rulers, their esoteric rulers, and even their hierarchical rulers. And you want to know the seven principles. It all starts there on page 260 or so of a treatise on cosmic fire, giving us the different way of counting the principles. We want to know a little bit of esoteric numerology, and of course, we want to know the seven rays. More complex is to know the creative hierarchies. We cannot yet know, I think, the frequency rates of the various subplanes on the on the solar planes, systemic. There are seven, and we certainly don't know the subdivisions of each one of those subplanes, so that we have basically 49 subplanes on every systemic or solar plane. There's just, and when it comes to music, although, you know, just like not everyone is going to be a professional astrologer or maybe even make that their main key to the secret doctrine, when it comes to music, you want to know the fundamental ratio relationships. And I have included them in this document, the proportions, you know, which start out as 2-to-1, well, 1-to-1, an octave, and 1-to-1 is the unison, and 2-to-1 is the octave, and then you'll want to know the 4-to-3 and the 5-to-4 and the 4-to-3 and the 3-to-2. You'll want to be able to define the Pythagorean triangle, the so-called 3-4-5 triangle. It's really amazing how in school, geometry class, we're taught, well, this is the Pythagorean 3-4-5 triangle, but at no time are we taught its relationship to musical proportion, nor anything about the Pythagorean methods of arriving at the relationship between tones. And the more complicated the ratio gets, the more dissonant we're liable to get. So if a ratio is really, well, you know, kind of irrational, and then we will really start to have the dissonant intervals. The larger numbers in relation to each other give the more dissonant intervals. The simpler integers tend to give intervals which we recognize as more harmonic. Anyway, we want to study the harmony of life. And the way to do that is to study at least some of the fundamentals of music along with astrology and rheology. And I think we'll discover that in the new esoteric schools, that kind of curriculum will be not only offered, but I think if Master Kutumi has anything to do with it, it will be required. So if you feel, okay, I don't know these things, or at least I don't have the fundamentals regarding them, then the thing to do is to study those fundamentals until you have learned them reasonably. Signs, rays, planets, ratios, and relationships between rays, signs, and planets. And of course, notes. All of these things are called spiritual numerals. And we should have a nice hefty chest full of spiritual numerals so we can correlate their relationship with each other. Plato did, you know, he had a lot of ability with music. Some people say that the whole Republic, his utopia, was written on a musical ideal. So going on here a little bit more, and then that'll be the end of this particular program. In the egoic note, as before said, you have a similar sequence, for it is the reflection on its own plane of the logoic. So you have, you know, fundamental, major third, perfect fifth, and the octave. And I think he's going to say something very much like that right now. You will therefore have the basic note of the physical. Okay. I wonder if I could. There are different ways of looking at this, of course. The basic note of the physical we could call, you know, even green. The third of the emotional, and that third note can also be associated in some ways with the mind and with buddhi. So, you know, we could just let it be blue here, but it could be yellow as well. And the fifth of the causal levels, and well, that actually should be blue. So that's, I'm going to make it light blue and not the dark blue of indigo. And when it comes to the third of the emotional, well, I just don't think I have the right color for it, but I'll kind of put it in yellow, because we've already seen how if we work with the splits in the solar planes, we come up with physical and etheric. And on the mental level, we come up with lower mind and higher mind. And if you count those together, you do get a five for the higher mind. In other words, dense physical, etheric, astral, lower mental, higher mental, five. When a man has mastered the key and has found his own subtone, then he will sound the sacred word with exactitude, which we can't do yet apparently, and thus reach the desired end. His alignment will be perfect. The bodies will be pure, the channel free from obstruction, and the higher inspiration will be possible. This is the aim of all true meditation. When you start calling the word meditation medication, you'll know you've arrived. This is the aim of all true meditation and can be reached by the right use of the word. In the meantime, owing to the absence of a teacher and the, on the physical plane, I guess, and the defects of the pupil, all that is now possible is to sound the word as well as may be, knowing that danger does not lurk where there is sincerity of purpose, and that certain results, such as protection, quieting, and correction, may be achieved. So even with the approximate sounding, something of value may be achieved. And here are some of the results of the process. Well, again, you see what a tremendous subject it is, and how, if we know anything, it's only the ABCs, and usually because we have been taught by someone who knows the whole process. So I'll put the seal on it with that fuchsia color. So the key. Now remember mastering the key. Remember how important this dominant fifth really is. And we can say this to remember the relationship between the key note and the dominant fifth, or the fifth as it is called. I think, you know, if we can go back and forth between the bass note and the dominant, we have a useful interval. Let's say we're in the key of C, It seems to be a good reference key, but we could also, as I've discussed, be in the key of A. But in the key of C, or, you know, you'll hear that fifth sounded. My colleague Harold Moses has a number of these intervals sounding in some of the music that he has created for meditation. And what's really interesting is that the space, the interval between the tonic, the fundamental, and the fourth, is exactly the same. It's a fourth, just like the relationship between the soul and the monad. So dee da dee bum bum ba bum 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 ba bum. That is the relationship between the blue and the red. Again, if we're in the key of C and we're using C as a red note, which so many of the musicians have deemed to be the color quality of that key. I think if you want a really good example, you know, the fourth movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, is such a marvelous heroic thing. It's all, you know, it's in the key of C major. And it's a very red piece. Beethoven had a lot of the first ray, and of course the fourth ray. And the first and fourth rays are the rays of Germany. He's one of the great composers of Germany. Brahms, I think, had that as well. First and fourth, certainly fourth, and Bach, fourth and seventh and second rays. Probably ultimately second ray, which I don't think was the case with Beethoven. And Wagner is peculiar there too. Again, first and fourth, first ray personality, fourth ray soul. But, you know, the last opera was a great religious opera called Parsifal. And it was, you know, much more about the Christ and redemption and suggesting the transition to the second ray, even though his first ray personality, I think, left much to be desired. He said some awful things, and he was certainly a great egotist. But one has to outgrow those things, you know, by comparison. So, whoop, that's not good. And there, that's better. We're going to get into the group use of the word. And we have stopped at page 65. And we've just traveled a little bit here, not very many pages, I think. Yeah. So we've gone from 61 to 65. And we'll be beginning on 65. And on whatever day it may be, whether today or another day. So we began program 16 here and went up to page 65, and program 17 will be coming up. the musical language of the universe, or at least let's keep it even within our solar system, be a little bit humble about it, because we just don't know how it's going to work elsewhere in the vast reaches of a universe, is really something that must be studied. And, you know, the Tibetan is not emphasizing music too much, but he certainly got that kind of education, and from his understanding, knows a lot about the musical key to the secret doctrine. And from 65 to 61 to 65, that's now I see what we have. Yeah, that's what we've done so far. And that was program 16, and now program 17 will begin at 65. And we'll see how much time there may be to go into it further. Depth after depth of spiritual occultism is possible to understand. And of course, we have to find a way to apply it, you know. We can't just go on accumulating. The master is the camel and we are the donkey, you know. So if we keep on putting the load of a camel on a donkey, just kind of accumulating the books, the knowledge, etc., the donkey will collapse, and karmically it won't be good either. Because unless we apply the knowledge, it remains unused and can become poisonous, as it were, within the field of the mind. So we have lots to consider when it comes to what we do with this knowledge. Admittedly, so much of the world is not ready for occultism. I mean, so much of the human race, and as DK constantly reminds us, not ready. But the implications of the occult way of thinking, reincarnation, eternal progress, the emphasis upon meditation and upon service in general, these things many human beings are ready for, and we have to make it possible for them and for ourselves, of course, because if we don't do it ourselves, we can't help others very much. We have to make it possible for those who are ready to achieve. So our next kind of section is about the group use of the word, and there's quite a few divisions in it, which so it makes me satisfied that we are going to begin that with another program. Yeah, this is very important. Just about everything in this foundational book. Well, you know, if he wrote it, it's important. And he even gives us the benefit of the doubt of telling us what is the most important part of the important things that he has written. And so the assimilation aspect is what we have really to think about. Such wonderful material, and, you know, in my estimation, dealing with students of this material, I realize how much more there is to assimilate. So on to program number 17, when next that becomes possible, whether in 10 minutes or whatever number of days. Lots of love, many blessings, and let's continue to really get our foundation together. All the best.